Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark the Liberty, and due to an unexpectedly busy schedule, we're actually not going to have a new episode for you this week. Instead, we're going to use this time to replay one of our favorites that still has relevance. It's been over a year now since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic that radically changed where most employees work from. And while some organizations are slowly opening their doors back up to their workforce, remote employment is really here to stay. So this week, we're going to look back to an interview we had with security expert Kat Murdoch, where we discussed how this shift to working from home affected security and what companies can do to make sure that they keep their remote workforce safe. Stay tuned. So joining us today is security expert and penetration testing pro, Kat Murdoch. Thanks for joining us, Kat.
Yeah, so happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Of course.
Hey, everybody. I'm Kat Murdoch. I currently work as a security consultant at GuidePoint Security on their threat and attack simulation team. So we run the gambit there, anything from an external penetration test to full red teaming services, including on-site social engineering, as well as internal penetration testing or anything creative that our clients bring our way or that we think would be great. You know, we're very much tackling any challenges in the realm of pretending to be a bad guy. So it's great. My team
that
is
sounds like a ton of fun.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's honestly, our team is fantastic. Everyone is super smart and willing to share knowledge. So it's a really wonderful environment to foster further learning and kind of that constant hacker drive to figure out how things work. So, you know, if you don't know the answer, somebody there does.
So I'm going to go ahead and assume that your closet is basically just full of black hoodies and that's it.
I really honestly wish like I could dispel this myth, but unfortunately, I live in Colorado and I actually own a lot of hoodies, but they're not all black.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
What, your hair's not colored? You don't have tattoos and wear a trench coat and all black?
Not always.
Like purple hair?
My hair is actually blue right now. I will actually throw that out there. Coronavirus season is I was like, what's in this beauty or like bathroom closet? And I was like, oh look, there's a hair conditioner that will dye my hair blue. I guess I'll try it. Like, this is what the pandemic has driven us to.
A staple of every hacker
filling
closet.
Filling stereotypes.
So, Kat, basically, we always like to start our interviews by asking our guests to basically describe what we call their security origin story. So specifically, like, what are some events throughout your life that kind of steered you towards where you're at right now with your role or got you into security?
Yeah, so kind of a roundabout pathway. I didn't ever like set out with the intention of going this direction. But so my academic history is in public policy and documentary studies. And then I got a minor in earth and ocean science because I kind of want to just like swim with the fish all the time. That'd be my ideal. so really kind of all over the place. A lot of the impetus in the public policy, though, was the fact that policy controls systems. And that's kind of like, you know, I'm giving a little bit of foreshadowing in this narrative, but that's a lot of what we do. So I didn't realize that I was inadvertently building to this point. And why I chose public policy, I went to Duke. They have a great program there for public policy. Go Blue Devils. Woohoo. Sad we didn't get to watch March Madness, but it's fine. I'll get over it. The safety of the world is far more important. And so I chose public policy because it was a degree that gave you really tangible takeaways that were applicable in many sectors. So kind of how I've lived my entire life is making sure that I maximize what doors are open moving forward and that I don't shut down opportunities. And so I kind of like to I decision model everything very naturally, just like, okay, so if I make this choice, what can I no longer do or what does it enable? Which, again, foreshadowing is really helpful in this job. So
threat modeling for sure.
So I graduated into the last recession, which was fantastic. And I was, jobs were very hard to come by. So I applied to Teach for America, which is a 2-year program where you learn to teach. You don't have to have any background in teaching. I certainly did not. And they put you in boot camp for 6 weeks. So you learn really quickly. You learn how to thrive in an uncomfortable environment. Are these words sounding familiar? and a lot of other things. So over 6 weeks, you learn how to teach small children and manage small children, which is a huge feat. And kudos to all the teachers out there. Now that, you know, my stepdaughter is home and I'm like doubling as teacher again. And so I did that. And then afterwards, I worked in nonprofits for a little bit, but turns out you make no money in nonprofits. Shocker. Like 22-year-old me did not know this. And I kind of had toyed with law school a ton. And I thought law school because you look at logical reasoning and you look at logical flows and you figure out where humans have broken them or could break them. And you try and work against that through policy and writing. So again, foreshadowing. So all of these things that felt very non-hackery and non-security related were being built latently, and I didn't really internalize that this is where they were headed. And I just randomly started IT consulting. I got a job with a consulting firm out of Chicago, and it was work from home, so I could still work in nonprofits and really try and give back my skills. And eventually I did leave the nonprofits to the wayside for a little bit. I feel very guilty about that, clearly based on the tone that I'm using. And I focused more and more on the IT consulting side, and that morphed into doing some security policy consulting, which utilized a lot of my past skills. And then I was like, this is not nearly as much fun as the people who I am defending against. So I was like, see you, blue team, I'm not doing this anymore. And I was like, how can I get a role in offensive security? Yeah, where the job seems a lot easier because all you have to do is break one thing instead of fix all the things. So kudos to all the blue teamers out there, including my husband. I joke a lot about how our relationship is reflective of our jobs, where he like builds stuff and then I just walk through and break in like 2 seconds. And I'm like, oh, look, I found the flaw. Like, this is never going to hold up. So that's kind of how my security journey got here. I love looking at systems. I love looking at humans' impacts on systems. And I love looking at, quite frankly, like where functionality and enterprise requirements are rules that dictate the logic game. Like at the end of the day, each organization has its own baseline acceptable risk. Like I'm sure, you know, y'all's does, any of our listeners do, and ours have very different ones. And there's nobody, no consultant. I mean, some consultants can help you define that, but really nobody can step in and tell you exactly what is best for your environment. Quite frankly, like going back to my Teach for America days, like one of the main lessons they tell you is like, you aren't there to fix the community's problems. You're there to be part of the community's solution. And I very much like view myself as that from the red team perspective as well. Like I'm not here to make anybody feel bad. I'm not here to, you know, I am here to pick at the holes in your network, but I'm not here to tell you that you have to fix all of them. I'm not here to tell you which ones are important to fix. I understand you're hamstrung. And where a lot of people find that to be frustrating, and maybe it can be challenging sometimes in the offensive world to bear in mind all the hurdles that our blue team, you know, buddies and blue team peers are working through. It's really, really like, I actually do enjoy thinking through like, okay, well, I didn't think about that requirement. I didn't think about the fact that like, you can't do that based on legacy infrastructure or personnel buy-in or whatever hurdles you're up against. Like, I can't tell you what that is. And so my origin story has really like brought me to this place of I really like to use empathy with my clients in the sense that like, I can't possibly understand the pressures you're under. I did find all these things, but I really don't want to make you feel badly about them. Like, that is not the point. Like, your job is extremely hard, and hopefully like, maybe I've illuminated something that you didn't know about. Maybe I found like an IoT device on your main network, and like, that's something that's like very actionable. Then you're like, that's not okay. But at the end of the day, all I can do is tell you what I see, what we can do, and exercise that, and then try and fit it into the rules that you will have to play by. And I do actually love the additional, like, you have to think about all of these little things. Like, these are all of the rules in our game of Tetris. This is the board that you can put your puzzle piece in, like, whatever. So that's kind of how I'm here. It doesn't sound like a linear path, and for a really long time I was like, oh, I don't belong here. Like, I didn't have these skills, or I didn't come into this into like the traditional sense through help desk or through like service, which, like, shout out to everybody who did, that's amazing. And so I felt very much like, oh, I didn't have these skill sets like building over the years. But that's not really the case now that I've done a little bit of soul searching. And back in the day, I don't know, I coached like Lego Mindstorm robots with my Teach for America students, and I used to do robotics when I was in middle school and high school, and I, you know, got really into HTMLing my Neopets site. So I think that, you know,
yeah,
I didn't see it, yeah, right? I didn't see it as all these moments of building skills, but they were. And there's that great game in the 2000s, I think, called like Creatures, and you could like you could definitely get in and like change the evolutionary pattern of these creatures. Yes. There's a whole series.
Yeah. And yeah, it was randomized, right? So it would use, it was, yeah, kind of, if you remember, I'm Pop Pop Corey on this podcast. I'm the old guy. There was a game called Life which wasn't as graphically cool as Creatures, which I remember you're talking about, the same thing. You would have this very pixelated idea of life evolving. But yeah, I think your origin story is fascinating. I think it's very similar to a lot of ours, in that you don't necessarily have to go out trying to say, I'm going to be a hacker and care about security, but your analytical mind, the curiosity, the things about thinking about how people in policy work, we love all that. And the one thing I really love about what you said, and we talk about it on our show sometimes, I think me and Mark, and I maybe you agree, we're kind of cybersecurity nerds, but they sometimes make the mistake of thinking you should be secure for the sake of security, or have this ivory white tower idea of cybersecurity. But as you point out, like a business's goal for cybersecurity, security is kind of, in some ways, an unfortunate thing they have to do just to run their business online today. And their goal isn't to fix every single problem. It's finding that right fine line between risk management, risk acceptance, and mitigation. And their only goal is to run their business as effectively as possible and mitigate the cyber risk that would impact their business. So I think the way you and your company seem to point it out is, or to consider, you know, how you should secure React to Red Team reports is pretty cool. But you mentioned foreshadowing a few times, and we've kind of alluded to the subject. Well, you know, me and Mark have been talking about the pandemic a little bit, but obviously it's a huge topic. No one can really talk without thinking about it. It's on our minds. You know, all of us, if we admitted, we're a little scared of what's going on because we haven't seen it before. But it's also just causing this rapid and extreme change in our workforce. You know, almost overnight, some businesses, not always tech businesses like the ones we enjoy being, have had to figure out ways to work from home overnight. And that's had a big impact. So this is kind of a two-part question we can discuss. But what do you think this change means for security, based on what you're seeing with your clients and some of your red teaming? And how else do that we might not think about, is this security topology changing as we're all kind of leaving our traditional work habits from the office place?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a ton to unpack there. Quite frankly, even just starting from a comment you made before this moment, where baseline acceptable risk, like, what does that look like now? How is that shifting? And I think that a great case study, and I'm sure they've been mentioned a ton recently, is Zoom. Whether it is like Zoom's personal baseline acceptable risk or the people, their clients who are using them, they've clearly, you know, they went from something like 10 million users to 200 million almost overnight. Like, they were not prepared at that scale. And I'm not defending or advocating, this is not an opinion on Zoom security. It is using them as an allegory to kind of just look at what we're all up against. Like, suddenly you have every security professional in the world, slash at least a good majority of the ones on Twitter, like, picking apart what your privacy policy, your code, your acceptable use, what are the malicious exploits and possible avenues in, and how can somebody even just prank you using Zoom? Like, these are questions that they never had to operate, the scale at which, the order of magnitude that they have to operate on just escalated so quickly. I think, you know, and then asking ourselves, like, as clients, as customers, as consumers of this potential product, like, are we okay with this? Are we okay with the way they're rolling things out? Are we okay with the speed at which they respond to feedback and provide updates? And are their counterparts better or worse? Do we even know? And so just remembering to ask all those questions before we're like, okay, well, our whole worldview, everything we do has changed. Now we're using these new tools, time to like put them under a magnifying glass. Like, everyone is under stress, but it's a really unique kind of stress, quite frankly. Like, I am super empathetic to all of the engineers over at Zoom. And quite frankly, you know, based on their responses, they do seem they seem well-intentioned. Did they have some questionable things that they have done in the past? Maybe. Should quality assurance have not let those slide through? Probably. But like, we all work in companies. Most people listening to this have probably worked in at least one big company. Like, it can be very hard to make sure that every single pathway in is shored up. And that just got so much harder, whether it's Zoom or everyone. Like, now we have so many endpoints and none of them we can control. You know, for the legacy concept of security is secure the perimeter, secure the data center, secure the data. Like, that's how VPNs evolved, quite frankly, is like, how can we get the rare person who is not in the office access to the data center? Okay, let's build a tunnel. Cool. That was a great idea. But now we're actually having to secure, it's no longer about a physical perimeter to anything. It's not a physical perimeter to a data center. It's not physical access to these things. It is like, what do people's home Wi-Fi networks look like? What, you know, can we intercept their wife, their handshake just rolling down the street? Like, can I get, I think, quite frankly, my husband and I have Ponagachis, which are they're tiny little like Ettercap, and you can wander around and they intercept all the handshakes, and then they crack, you can crack them. Yeah. Anyway, so
pineapple, we, so for we have Wi-Fi, those. We use pineapples too. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally can use pineapples. But I mean, I'm so sorry if any of my neighbors are listening to this, but the odds are we have cracked a lot of our neighbors' passwords. We don't use them. Clearly, we have our own great internet, and it's like, we don't want
God,
to use
God
other
forbid
people,
anyone's but... using WEP anymore, too. I'm sure you crack those ones in like 5 seconds. Versus,
yeah.
At least use WPA and use a long, long password in case me, Mark, or Kat are there. WPA2, by the way. Or three.
Yeah,
three would
two,
be even
two,
better.
Two. Three would be great, but like, that's like a myth at this point in the enterprise world, I feel like.
we have it, but that's just because we're kind of nerds. Yeah.
Hold on. So I think that like, that really is, it's a huge issue for companies now who have sent all their workers home. And quite frankly, it's probably a wake-up call. Like, I'm not, please do not misunderstand me. I'm not saying that the pandemic should be here or not. But at the end of the day, like, we've had the infrastructure to grow technologically from a business space for a while. And, you know, a lot of people have not had the push. And I think we saw that with some of the resistance to, I'm going to 100% call out like Charter Networks or whatever. If I got the name wrong and I called out some other company, I'm so sorry. But there is there is a utility company in Colorado called Charter, at least here. I think that they're national, but they refuse to let their employees go home once the governor said everybody has to go home. And it became a really big deal because employees were like, I don't feel safe. And Charter's like, no, we're work from here. Like, this is our culture. We do this. Rawr. And it was like a whistleblower wound up like publishing to Reddit or something like, hey, this is happening. And he got let go. So maybe I got the story not accurate. I'm going to own that. Like, I should have researched it. It wasn't on my notes. But it was it blew everything up because these companies, these legacy companies, have the idea that you have to go in. And people have this idea that you have to monitor your employees. And I will say that, like, when we hire, our company is fully remote. We already made this adjustment. And when you hire for people, you do look for individuals who are self-starters, who don't need micromanagement, who you can trust to get their job done. And maybe people haven't hired with that in mind. That being said, everyone who holds a job is an adult, and everyone right now is panicking. So let's be a little bit empathetic and trust them to go home. And this is definitely going to have to catalyze a technological movement of, like, what does security look like? What can this look like? And will people return to offices? Because in a lot of capacities, it's like freeing, liberating, and it's not impossible to increase your security, but absolutely. So you have the ability to weaker home Wi-Fis, weaker passwords, the fact that you've probably shared that Wi-Fi password with all of your friends, unless you're crazy people like us and you wind up having like a bunch of different subnets at your house.
Yep.
Like, as one does. Like, and I'm sure,
know
you know
that.
Probably the, yeah, like, you guys, the people listening to this, like, we're a little bit of a biased group, but it is
security
abnormal.
Individuals tend to be a little more paranoid than average.
Yeah.
By the way, exactly. I thought of a couple things before we follow up. I mean, I totally agree with you. If there's a silver lining, it's probably too soon to talk about pandemic silver linings, is you talked about the old case of the charter business, but I would argue most businesses now, you know, there's a lot of research showing that a lot of us are telecommuting anyways, even before the pandemic, right? Even though there's no work at home policy necessarily, we spend 50% of our time somehow doing stuff out of the office. So if anything, the one thing this might be good for the security industry is it kind of accelerates our, like, we've been doing it and maybe we haven't been taking as close a look as how securely we've been doing it. So maybe that will be a forcing point that will help us. And like you say, if we change to a more work at home society, in some cases it would help. The other thing you pointed, like, I think you shared the two things, but I want to make the connection for our listeners. You talked about VPN, great way to secure the traffic from a user to your office, but you mentioned the wireless networks, having no control or even no really understanding as a business what their Wi-Fi network is like. And I just wanted to point out that as great as a VPN is, we talk about it as a security tool, it's also a freeway inside your network. So if that endpoint is weak, if that network is weak, it's like a backdoor right into the kingdom past all your security filters. So I think that's what you were kind of implying there, that VPNs are great for securing traffic, but if we can't guarantee that home user has secured their environment or at least their endpoint, you know, that VPN almost becomes the opposite, where it's a backdoor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that from the security side, the buzzword being thrown around a lot is like a zero trust model of security for access, which is really more of like a software defined perimeter rather than a VPN, where individuals only have access to the resources they need. There are so many hurdles to rolling something like that out. So I'm very empathetic. Like, not only is it user awareness, but you have to meet like in user training, which is a huge hurdle, but it is ensuring that you have properly configured all the steps that are required to have a software defined perimeter. So that is, you know, which applications are necessary for what roles. Separation and segregation of duty policies become like instrumental and absolutely far more important than they are right now, because it's no longer, if you wind up being like, oh, everyone needs admin privileges to XYZ service, or everyone needs to be able to see this, then you're back to essentially having the VPN problem, depending on which service that is. It's like perfect entrance to the network. So, you know, it's definitely a combination of a bunch of resources. And I do hope that we see a lot of like those patterns are adopted. So it would be, you know, we definitely need multi-factor authentication. You probably need a single sign-on, a trustworthy single sign-on that is constantly auditing its own traffic and constantly auditing what, you know, how it issues analysis. Certificates. Correct. And so you have to find really like solid vendors where that's concerned. And then you have to make sure that whoever deploys your MFA solutions has covered all of the necessary aspects of software and applications and things that people interact with. So I'm not saying that this is like something that it's a long term initiative, quote unquote, for sure. It's not something that I expect anybody to go out and roll out tomorrow. But I do think we're going to start seeing the value there. Because VPNs are huge backdoors.
But to your point, if in a zero trust model, you use a VPN when needed to secure the communication, but that VPN wouldn't be what we call a zero route. It would be a on-demand only to the applications that particular user was. And in zero trust models, I think you even can use behavioral analytics. So a big part of zero trust is, you know, you mentioned authentication, because the beginning of a zero trust model is you have to strongly know that the person you're dealing with really is, say, Corey. Because you don't want to give my privileges to just anybody. And take is probably the implicit word. How many times will Mark try to pwn me every day? I got to keep on my toes. But anyways, the cool thing is, like you mentioned, multi-factor authentication is a cool way to add some strongness. But a lot of these zero trust models also have constant continuous risk-based analysis. And what I mean by that is they do use strong authentication, which should make it hard for an attacker. But they also pay attention to the behaviors of each user after to see if, just in case we authenticated the wrong person, let's pay attention to what they do to see if we maybe should send other authentication factors at him later on or her, because we're not sure we trust him anymore. So yeah, it's I can tell you, we love zero trust. We're trying to build towards it, but it is so, you're right, it's hard, because you have to have like all your ducks in a row for all the other systems and security controls you use.
It's super hard. And then, yeah, sure, add behavioral analytics on top of it, but then you get back to a very common problem, which is, who is monitoring this? and in like who is checking to make sure. And so it's not just about buying the tools for a successful rollout, it's ensuring you have the personnel, which kind of again like loops back in a weird in like the spiral of this conversation to, okay, so you've decided to do this as an organization, but now that means you actually have to prioritize security. And security is not often viewed, definitely industry dependent, but it's so frequently not viewed as something that enables revenue generation. It's viewed as a burden. And so I'm sure tons of people listening, anybody who has like a security minded heart or works on a security team, you encounter hurdles all the time with just making sure that you can have the people you need to do something that's highly specialized, and entering into a potential recession. Like on the one hand, or we are technically in the recession. I just am like living in a little bit of denial, but tiny bit of denial over here. But you know, you're looking at a time where businesses might have to not spend as much money because other businesses are shuttering their doors. And so it's a vicious feedback cycle because it's a global, we live in a global economy. And so what happens, some security teams will recognize that like cybercrime is really on the rise. Like informational assets to attackers are like A, tons of opportunity right now. B, everyone's stuck at home. C, as we've already discussed, those of us in security and anybody who's like doing any malicious penetration testing or hacking, like we all have more time in our houses. Like the bad guys do too. So there's a huge increase in ransomware and phishing emails and attempted attacks and attacks that leverage COVID and people's already baseline fear. A lot of my like entry into offensive security was through social engineering and like my ability to write a compelling phishing email and then use all my Neopets HTML skills to make it pretty. Like, but you have a huge increase in all these attacks, and some companies recognize this and they have the buy-in from their executives to make sure that they can put in the controls they need. But then you have the companies who are going to have to shave cost and budgets. And a lot of times that comes out of security. So what happens now that we're in this like increasingly insecure world with increasingly more questions? And some people are, you know, we're given the green field necessary to actually do the best by our users and our clients to secure them. And then you have other departments and, you know, our colleagues who are really struggling to get the buy-in and support they need and are actually having resources withdrawn in a time where moving to a zero trust model would be ideal, but also requires a ton of resources and requires a ton of people. So I think it's like a fascinating kind of dark cycle, but I'm on the one hand, there are tons, the topography has completely changed. There are tons of issues with sending people home to work on their home networks globally for a lot of organizations. There are tons of things that we can look at to improve upon what we have now. And those can be quick hits and things that we fix immediately, or it can be much longer term issues that we need to continuously readdress and commit to, regardless of if it's COVID season or not.
Exactly.
And yeah, and ultimately so much empathy to all the blue teamers out there. I am here to help you in any way we can. We're definitely trying, but yeah, it's a scary unknown world out there with lots of new news. And I think security is poised with a lot of awesome people in the field who are curious, to Corey's point earlier, who like to figure out solutions to complicated problems. And this is 100% a complicated problem that requires many different solutions.
Exactly. And I think you made a really good point earlier about how it's not just companies that are like organizations that are having growing pains, but like even vendor companies too, like Zoom having to go from 10 million to 200 million people working like that. And as companies are now having to migrate to off-perimeter security and working from home primarily just to stay in business and comply with all these new rules, there's going to be a lot of growing pains in that. And I wanted to ask, like, what are your thoughts on like some of the new security challenges that organizations are going to have to face in this current landscape now? Like, I think you already hinted at a really good one with phishing, and that attackers like Corey and I have mentioned a few times on this podcast love to go after whatever the biggest news story is right now. So whether it be the Olympics or now a pandemic or something like that, and they use that in their phishing attacks. And we expect to see a lot of similar style attacks going forward like that now too. I wanted to see what your input was on that or what your thoughts were.
Yeah, so I want to first make an analogy that I got from a friend that is the shift in value sets in the pandemic season across the board has really changed. So 4 months ago, I don't think anybody would have batted an eye at like, okay, here's a diamond ring and here's a box of N95 masks, which is more valuable. Like everyone would have been like, definitely the ring. That is no longer the case. So as each person's like views on what is valued in the world shift, so are the attackers. So, you know, what are they going for? What is valuable to them? I don't know that I can answer that outright. I'm sure it changes based on the group. Like nation state actors right now may have shifted focus for different reasons than somebody who's just in it for money. Some ransomware groups came out and were like, we're not going to attack hospitals right now. And you're like, great, thanks. Like real low bar. Cool. I'm sure there are other ones that will. And are you just saying this to not draw attention to yourself? I don't know. I don't trust this. I don't trust you. So absolutely, we're seeing a rise in phishing emails. I think we will absolutely see a rise in picking apart things that are now used for remote work that weren't previously used. You know, what are the exploits available in Zoom? How can you utilize, you know, can you leverage Microsoft Teams against people who use Teams and not Zoom? Lot of like, what's wrong with your Palo is like what's misconfigured. So all the malicious actors are going to have a lot more time to pick at all these services that we previously used as a luxury item and they're now a requirement. And I do think that phishing emails are a great example, particularly because social engineering leverages human psychology. It is our basic flight or fight responses. When you write a phishing email, you tend to think really hard about like, okay, what emotional trigger can I throw in here to make someone click? What will make them want to click? And you typically go for like curiosity or fear or greed. And if there are like right now, I think it's safe to say most humans are experiencing two of those three emotions just as a baseline. And it's not greed. Like I think we're all a little bit afraid. And we're all very curious because nobody has answers. And so having those two fight or flight responses already triggering like in our amygdalas, in our brains, we're set up to kind of be victims of people who are going to exercise the opportunities presented by the pandemic. And that is disappointing and depressing, but very true.
Yeah, it's kind of lowered the tipping point, right? I mean, normally, like, if you're going for a phishing attack when everything's normal, your phishing lure has to be fear-invoking enough to get them to that tipping point, which can sometimes be hard, but people are already right there. And so I assume one of the reasons, you know, you mentioned that some of the pandemic-related phishing is so effective is it doesn't take much more of a push to get people over the tipping point if they're already fearful of what's going on.
Correct. And there are so many facets of their lives that are affected right now. It can be your apartment building has a case and you're supposed to click to see what to do. It could be that your bank is shutting down and like if you need to withdraw money, like go do it now through this form. Like there are so many different, like as we pointed out earlier, it is almost impossible to have a conversation that the pandemic has not touched upon these days. Like I had a Zoom date with some girlfriends and that was in the first few minutes. One of them said like, oh man, like I wish we could talk about anything else. And it quickly became apparent that it touches everything. And because it touches everything, it does leave the opportunity for us to be tricked by social engineers or malicious actors in so many different facets. Like how many people would love to hear from their local school district right now that, you know, here are better online learning tools or your kids going back to school if they like can meet the following requirements. So I think that just the fact that we're all so on edge is going to make people more jumpy, more likely to click, more likely to take action because everyone is in survival mode. And that is scary and it's really hard for people to defend against.
Speaking of it's really hard, I'm going to ask you the hard follow-up question. I mean, as you pointed out, we actually are receiving a crap load of legitimate emails about this. I think if you have vendors in your life, which I'm sure every person does, they all have digital lives, you know, every vendor, and for good reason, is using this to communicate quite regularly to let you know what's going on so you don't worry. And as you pointed out, it's not just the vendors, it's the school, it's the extracurricular activities. So we are legitimately, in my opinion, getting so much pandemic-related email, which, as to your point, makes it really easy for phishers to use too. So is there, you know, there is no magic, and you point out it's hard, but is there little indicators? You, as someone whose organization sometimes crafts these emails as part of pen tests, what should someone look at? And in this case, you know, while it's technically probably phishing, let's talk about it like spear phishing. When all of us are already kind of trained to be looking for these legitimate emails, what should we look for that to help tip us off that this particular COVID email may not be one we want to deal with?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. In general, my number one rule of thumb for avoiding phishing emails is if you get something that makes you want to act immediately, listen to the voice in your head that says do the thing, and you say, wait a second, why do I want to do this thing? Is there a like, did the email specifically say I am on a tight time frame? Because that is a manipulation tactic. Did they craft the environment in which I am reacting? Are they leveraging the current environment? Like chief most, it doesn't matter if it's an interesting PDF from your parents about COVID information or something from your HR company or like your company's HR saying do the following steps or wash your hands or whatever. If there is a link or if there is something to download, let's start with the link. If there is a link, go directly to the source of the link instead of clicking through the email. And I'm sure tons of people listening are like, oh, this is pretty tired advice. You've probably heard it a million times in security awareness videos.
It works.
But it works, yeah. So if you get an email from your bank saying click here to make sure that your money is still present or whatever else, that's very outlandish. But if it's like, oh, please fill out the following, your HR sends you an email saying fill out the following form, we have to take an audit if anyone's been infected, because that's something that's very real right now. Like some states, some companies, they have to report. And so instead of doing that, like, go to Workday, go to Paylocity, go to whatever you use where this information is shared directly. Do not click the link. When it comes to downloading a file, this is actually looping back to more risk from working remote. Nobody can walk over to Jane in accounting's cube to ask, hey, Jane, did you send me this email? Jane is in New Jersey and you're in Texas, like something like that. So instead, like, you need to make sure that anything you're downloading or anything, especially if it has a macro, anything you're going to execute on your system, that you call yourself, you call the person and verify that they sent it. And if it's real and it's truly urgent, they're not going to be mad at you for wanting to verify. So it's okay to wait. It's okay to do your homework. It's okay to think through, like, do I need to do this right now? And it's definitely okay to go get your own information. So I think that that's my lead advice is, like, get your own information. Go yourself to verify to the known site. Call your friend in accounting instead of trusting the email. Like, we cannot trust that devices are with the owners right now, and we can't trust that who we're communicating with digitally is who we're intending to communicate with. So trust but verify.
Yeah, we think that's great advice. If I were to take it even high level, I think the two takeaways everyone remembers is, one, the skeptical mind. It's good to always have that scientific skeptical mind, even when you're getting stuff from people you know, which you pointed out. But just the high level is always be a skeptic. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you don't have to accept something once you've proven and verified, like you said. But be a skeptic. But the other high-level advice is, and I give this, so I hope I don't offend people, I give it for myself, is don't be lazy. And I know I say that in a weird way, but you mentioned the advice that we as a community give all the time of go directly to it and manually typing it. And the reason I say don't be lazy is we're fighting our urge to, we all want something immediately, right? If we see a link, we want to click on it. You know, if it is something we want, we don't want to have to go and manually type it and find it on the page. But it is true that sometimes security does, It's the classic, yes, security does sometimes add more hurdles, but those hurdles are also what keep you safe. So try to, I would say, yes, we know occasionally security can be a little more work, but right now when you're at home and you're at higher risk, it's worth your effort to do a little extra work for every link.
Yeah, and twisting, like spinning that a tiny bit, it's just, sometimes I ask myself the question, because I even want to get lazy sometimes. Like, sometimes I want to...
Me too.
join, yeah, I'm like, oh, this account for so-and-so retailer doesn't matter. I'm going to use a lazy password, like, or whatever. Like, I want to not follow my own advice. But then I stop, and I think about, and I'm not saying that the following game will work for everybody, because I am... politely paranoid slash skeptic, but go through, you know, like, how much is compromising my bank account actually worth to me? Like, it, like, yes, we have so much happening right now and we're all in crisis mode and everyone is stressed, but even though I feel like I want to cut a corner because I have so much I'm overloaded, like, is it worth my bank account? Like, we have to recognize that, like, I play this game all the time and I do this professionally. I am not the best hacker on the internet, for sure. Like, not, I don't even know if I'm in the top, like, 70%. I have no idea, because there are, like, the people who are really good aren't that loud about it. And so at the end of the day, I'm not going to be able to threat model absolutely everything that could go wrong from here. So, like, is it worth using a lazy password to potentially lose my bank account in the middle of a depression? No, it's not. So go directly to the link, go check, go verify, because it's not. And that, quite frankly, like, it's not to be like fear-mongery, it's not to spread like fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but I think it's really important that we not like Dunning-Kruger ourselves and believe we know more than we actually do about our online safety and our online presence. Like, the S in HTTPS does not mean everything is secure. Just because you see a lock on the bar in Chrome does not mean that that is secure. Like, there are all these things that people really crutch on as false senses of security. And I think right now it's important that, while I'm sure every security engineer out there is trying to do the best that they possibly can, each individual secure people make secure employees, make secure companies. And right now, like, from an individual to individual, like, level, no one is looking out for you. Like, I know that's, like, really dark, but for your personal security, your personal, like, bank account, you don't have anybody watching your back other than the vendors that you use, and they can make mistakes. So it's really important that to make sure that we are not increasingly individually negatively affected by this disaster and the ongoing pandemic, it's really important that we all take ownership of our own security. So that would be my warning there, is like, it's not just not being lazy. It's really valuing what are your secrets and what is your money worth.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And you mentioned like HTTPS and the padlock don't even mean secure anymore. And now we've also seen that like even the domain name doesn't mean you're secure. Like, we've seen legitimate Microsoft or Amazon subdomains because you're allowed to host whatever you want up in the cloud these days, you can stick up an HTML file, stick up your own website, and suddenly use that as a fake login form hosted on a legitimate domain to steal people's passwords.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There are a lot of clever tactics out there. And we're kind of rife for being victims right now, which is really sad, but I hate to be a downer. Yeah.
I don't think it is, because you gave the right advice there. I think, you know, the positive thing, the positive way of saying that is we can take ownership of ourselves. I mean, all individuals probably want a little bit of control of their own destiny. And it's not just that, you know, it's not your companies have left you out there hanging because they want to. It's the reality is we're at home alone and they can't always be here. But yeah. The positive thing, like you said, is you can take ownership. Mm-hmm. You know, just listening to this podcast, just talking with you, Kat, they can learn some things they can do to make themselves safer. Yeah. And it's kind of comforting sometimes to me to know that I can do something to make myself better too, and I don't just have to rely on the government or a security company or something else to help fix my problems. I'm perfectly capable of helping out myself. Yeah. And I think every person online, they're capable of doing things that will keep them more safe.
Honestly, that is like a great summary of like why of one of the most valuable lessons I continuously learn in offensive security, is that like you can find your own solutions. And even if it sounds big and it sounds like a big hurdle, it's probably not. Like, I don't know, years ago, whenever I was like supposed to stand up like a tiny web server, that sounded like, it sounds like a huge ordeal. Like, oh man, I got to stand up like a server. It's got to host stuff. It's got to be secured. And then you're like, it's literally five words in Python. Like, that's it. Like, I think it's actually only four. Like, I think it's Python and three switches, like, if I'm remembering. So, like, and that sounds highly technical, but it's kind of, like, it's super empowering. Every single day you're like, oh, man, I don't know if I can do this. I'm in an unfamiliar environment. I don't know how to get out. Like, I kind of view penetration testing as, like, oh, here, you're thrown into, like, you're thrown into this random subnet. Godspeed. Like, can you make it? And it really is. It's just, can you make it out of this unknown, unfamiliar environment where you didn't previously know what tools you had, and now you have to figure out how to MacGyver your way out? And that's kind of an analogy for our current life. Like, we are in completely uncharted territory. We don't know what's going on. We don't know if information is reliable, and we don't know if the tools we've relied on in the past will work here. So it's still, like, really important to remember that each and every single one of us is empowered to find our own solutions, that, like, we can go and, like, Google and find multiple sources to validate if, like, the step we want to take is correct or a good idea. And I really, truly, everyone listening to this podcast, everyone out there, please empower your family members, empower your parents. Like, you can do this. Like, you can go find your own solutions. It's hard. It takes a little bit of extra energy, but you'll actually be more empowered the more times you find something that sorts out your problem or makes you feel better moving forward. Like, you are the captain of your own destiny. That sounds, like, so, so, like, kitschy, but I feel like it's really important to remember right now when we're all panicking and the world really kind of validly feels like it's on fire every day. Like, yeah. And I do want to be
clear. By the way, the sad truth of these kids. I was going to say, the sad truth about these kitschier cliche things is the reason they're cliche is because over time they've proven over and over and over to be true. So I don't think it sounds that kitschy.
So, Kat, I want to be cognizant of your time, but I actually had a question about really with your own work right now. So with this really shift to the distributed workforce, like, a lot of organizations used to focus their security time and attention on their perimeter and then how to get remote employees back in under that perimeter to access the resources. But now everyone's working from home. One of those big things with securing perimeter was always penetration testing and making sure that your defenses are tested and proven to be working instead of just waiting for an incident to happen. So now with everyone working from home, this perimeter is kind of dissolving. Like, what does that mean for penetration testing? So for what you do right now?
So, I mean, there's definitely, like, aspects of my job that are par for the course. Like, you know, we're still continuing to test people's perimeter. We still have standard work. People still have compliance requirements and, you know, they want to make sure that they're as secure as they could ever be. But we have partnered with some clients who are awesome. So backtracking a little bit to, like, you know, companies do care. They just don't have time to care about each and every person, like, helping you build your personal personal home Wi-Fi to make it more secure. But they do care about it and they care. But, it comes back to what's in all of our lexicon or of control. Like, what can we actually control? And your employer and your bank, they can make their own systems and their own infrastructure more secure, but they really can't control what you do at your home. And so working with some clients who are very, like, interested in improving and shoring up any sort of work from home remote access issues presented by the new work from home epidemic. We've been doing a lot of remote access pen tests, which isn't really fully like an external pen test or a fully internal pen test, but clients have been really, like, proactive here. It is something that we are enjoying doing and, like, enabling them with and empowering them with. But essentially, it allows us to test how does, with these new systems, what has changed. Are you using Zoom more? Can we exploit your Zoom? Are you properly configuring it so that you're using passwords and people can't wildcard into your meetings? You know, can we do a VDI breakout? You know, what does it look like if you're using a virtual desktop now and you weren't previously, you were using a physical workspace? So we kind of take all of the aspects of, you know, this new world order and this new work from home lifestyle. And we're like, okay, knowing that 100% of your employees are now operating in this regard, where can we help you? What can you control organization-wide and enterprise-wide that will increase individuals, like every individual endpoints access to your network? Now, what that doesn't solve is it doesn't solve the home network issues. It doesn't solve the fact that, like, your children are rogue actors on your network and they're now on online school and clicking and downloading God knows what. So, like, so that.
And they're good at evading defenses, right? If you have any filters on your network, kids and are the first to try to figure out how to get past them.
Correct.
So I learned how to hack when I was a kid.
Exactly.
For reasons like
yep,
that.
Yep. You have a lot of adaptable persistent threats living in your house affecting your Wi-Fi. And there's no way, you know, like that is pretty limited.
Precocious APTs. That should be a new thing. Cute precocious APTs.
Yes, adorable. So like that is something that like we can't necessarily help our clients with, but it is 100% something that if, you know, an individual is doing work and they're not on the VPN because they don't have to be, but like their traffic could be intercepted because they're working on their home Wi-Fi, like that's not something that we can necessarily help our clients with. But I do think that there are opportunities there. And from our perspective, like the remote access pen testing is amazing. It feels really helpful. Helpful in the climate. It feels like our clients, the clients who want them or the clients who are interested in them, are really proactive, and like shout out to them for recognizing like this has shifted and I need to assess and audit what's happening. And I think that it could be really awesome to see from, you know, especially like larger companies, and this isn't something that, you know, our company does, but I would love to see more education, engaging education on how to help people secure their home networks. I think that that's something that's really inaccessible to many people. I heard, you know, like in low income neighborhoods, children have had to go home and they're expected to get online for school and they don't have a computer or they don't have internet. And benevolent neighbors are sharing their internet, their home Wi-Fi with like people who need it. And that's amazing. And I never want to tell anybody to not help their neighbor and not help out other humans in this like really trying time. But what I do want to tell them is to make sure that if your router has a guest Wi-Fi option, to enable it, like and give that out, because there's like, I mean, you can sit back and say, again, it comes back down to your baseline acceptable risk, but I can think of a handful of pretty alarming scenarios that occur from like exclusive use of home Wi-Fi networks. One, decrease in broadband, which we're all seeing. Like a lot of people's internet is getting far worse because so many people are on it. But more maliciously, you know, a rogue actor, your neighbor could be a rogue actor. You don't know. Like they could be somebody could be intercepting your traffic or using your Wi-Fi for nefarious purposes. And then it's tracked back to you and you get blamed. That's a really niche scenario, but it's absolutely accurate. Or somebody intercepts your home Wi-Fi and gets information on your employer. And now you lose your job because you accidentally like didn't secure your home network and the company is now compromised. But that's not something that like, that's not in a BYOD policy. There's no BYO router. Like that's not something that anybody like most companies have written in right now. So, you know, I would love to see some of the bigger like Fortune 100 employers who are a little bit like more stable giving lessons and making home networking a little bit more approachable for people so that, you know, it's less of the wild, wild west. And I don't know if maybe people are doing that already, but I think it would be great to see some organizations empowering their employees to understand it better. That's not really in the scope of what we offer. We're not going to go and audit each individual's home. We're not walking into each individual's home. We're not doing on-site work. But I do think like combined, like if you take something like the remote access penetration test and you combine it with like internal edification of your employees for these new technologies that they're not accustomed to using, that is like an actionable, strong path forward. And I'd love to see more of that. But yeah, so we're definitely, to long-winded answer, like we are loving the remote access pen tests. They're very fun because it's like how to get in from the perimeter in novel modern ways. Like it's very, very, very real world. It's no longer like, well, somebody poking around on this web app like might see this 0-day, blah, blah, blah. Like it feels much more attainable. Like these are real problems. These are people who are using this network all the time in this manner. So I love that. And then I would love to see each individual employer empower their employees a little bit more.
Cool. Great answer. Well, for a second time, just want to ask you one more thing before we leave you a bit. But we've kind of organically covered a lot of little tips and things. But if there were some just very basic tips or tools you could give both IT professionals, and let's extend it to just the individual, it could be just the accountant at a company while they're working at home. Simple tips they could use or tools that or resources that might help. And I'll give you an example. One maybe you made me think of that you should elaborate on. But one, we were talking before about bad password practices. You deciding to use a bad password on one site could threaten your bank account. Luckily, we have cool tool options today like password managers that allow us to still be a little bit lazy But the tool actually takes care of securing our password, so we don't have to be quite as on it. So that's the one example. And the other one you mentioned in passing that hopefully most of our tech savvy audience knows is I didn't even think about VDI. VDI is a cool thing because right now we're all working at home, sometimes with our own resources. But VDI gives you the ability to kind of work on a corporate resource wherever you are, virtual desktops, essentially. So things like that, little things like that, that an organization or individual should do while they're sitting at home today trying to get their job done without threatening their business.
Yeah. So I love that you brought up password managers. Like, that's extremely important. I'm a huge password manager advocate. I honestly can't believe it hasn't come up already. because it is really inaccessible to, like, continuously generate passwords that you remember and keep in a secure location. And sometimes I get, like, pushback on, like, well, you know, can we trust the password manager? And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe you can't. Somebody out there, again, there's always a better hacker. There's always somebody who's like more specialized. Like, okay, yes, maybe you could get really hosed. I have fantasized about writing a fish that steals master passwords. Like, okay, absolutely, these things could exist. So it really comes down to, yes, use a password manager. Use it to create your router's password at your house. It will be super annoying to type in once, but I'm pretty sure at least some of the people listening to this are still using like the Netgear default password. So it's not going to be more annoying than that. Like, so feel free to set yourself a unique annoying password using your password manager and save it. And then your computer will probably save it for forever as it does. And you will never have to deal with it again. It will only be your guest problem, which you won't have for a while because we can't have friends over. So get yourself a password manager and reset your home Wi-Fi's password like immediately. When it comes to things like VDI breakouts, like that's a lot of configuration management from your employer. So if there are IT, if there are tech savvy IT people here who are in charge of that, you know, definitely dig into the new exploits. Like Citrix recently had a lot of scrutiny on, you know, how you could utilize its misconfigurations to break out. So always audit how things are operating. Always ask questions. You know, where is this communicating? How do we get in?
Always patch what you have, no matter what it is, just in case they fix some of the issues you're talking
about. Yeah. Though, yes, you should. Personally, and I don't know how to like factor this in, sometimes patches can produce more problems. So I personally tend to give myself 24 hours to let things like work themselves out, unless it's a 0 day and it's really bad. If it's a 0 day and it's really bad, then sure, like it feels like the solution is probably better than the problem.
Our kind of advice is for desktops, maybe patch quickly. For production servers, do the virtual test first, or to your point, wait a little. Yeah,
wait or test. But I mean, it's also, you know, the average and the like, yes, you should patch your stuff. So password management, patching, checking your configurations. I would say any sysadmins out there, make sure that your single sign-on is in front of all of the applications that your employees use. We see that really frequently, that one application won't require multi-factor. And so you don't actually have to have anything other than the password. And if the password is bad, then you can absolutely get in. So I really stress, use a password manager, use a long password where appropriate. Like anytime you can get above 12 characters, like power to you, absolutely do that. Like remember that when you are making a secure password, you're not trying to outsmart a human, you're trying to outsmart a supercomputer. And that's really important. And so to that end, you know, it doesn't matter if your password is a word in a different language or a word in plus like with numbers instead of letters. Like those are things that computers can get around very quickly.
By the way, that's why I love password managers, because the only limit is the site or product you're using. I mean, half my passwords are 32 characters as long as the site uses it, because I don't have to remember it. Who cares how long it is for me? So with a password manager, I'm more irritated when the site limits me to 12 characters, because then I have to change my default settings to allow that lower one. But I have my generator at 32 characters. Of course, I'm a little paranoid. Anything above 14
is probably good. No, I have it really
long too,
and I get like really mad because sometimes you'll have a vendor or something that will change.
Eight characters? If they ask, if they say eight characters, I'm like, where have you been? Are you part of the 20th century?
Like,
is your brute forcer running on a trash 80? I mean,
right?
My phone could brute force eight characters.
Yeah, like I could sneeze on this and get your password. The other thing I would really recommend for home, like for anyone at home, is get yourself a firewall. Like you can even use an open source one. pfSense is not terrible. Like, yes, if you misconfigure it, it can provide access to your network. But if you don't have any firewall, you can probably get access anyway right now. So I think from a home user approachability standpoint, like look into getting yourself a firewall and then read the documentation, even though there are no pictures and it can be boring because it's important to know how things work. Or if they're pictures, they're network diagrams.
You have plenty of time. You're at home right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect time to learn about
security.
Not to say
that stress and like freaking out and watching Tiger King on Netflix aren't like valid spends of your time, but you could probably carve out like 20 minutes to make sure your bank account information is safe. And yeah, I would just be like continue to be really leery of any phone calls you get. So I'm sitting here, I'm split between, you know, how much enterprise advice to give versus how much home user advice. Because at the end of the day, we're all people and we're all freaking out about keeping our individuals safe. I'm a big fan of VLAN, so making multiple subnets at your house, which does require.
Yeah, we talk about it too. Mm-hmm. I think both me and Mark, I mean, you mentioned kids. Luckily we have the ability to take our vendor WatchGuard's product home, which is all about VLANs and segmenting and physical segmenting too. But if you are that nerdy type and you can do it, my wife and kids are not on the network. I put my business computers. It's that simple. And I even go down to the point where my IoT devices are segmented from everything else. It's a pain in the butt because I have to have all the access control rules so that my actual phone and stuff can turn my lights on when I want that to work. But having that extra access control just will give you a peace of mind at home in case you do get a bad actor on one of your segments.
I hate giving this advice, but like watch your kids to some extent, not in like a big brothery way, but like they have a lot of time on the internet right now. They are all learning to navigate this new world order as well, and kids are constantly curious and they are very good at evading any sort of protections. And quite frankly, I'm not saying that from like a power to kids if they want to be like little
the curiosity is good. It's probably developed a lot of security experts, so I think you're saying you don't dislike the curiosity, you just also want to keep them out of things that would hurt them.
Limit their ability to affect the security of your information and your work. And they might not tell you if they download something shady. You might not know if they download something shady. And then that shady thing could be on your network and you have no idea.
Mark, do you have an example? We were just talking about kids. I thought you just had an interesting example from some stranger's kids, you know.
My girlfriend's kids, because I've...
Oh, I was giving you an out.
I'm going to talk about it. It's cool. No, one of them complained about like their laptop running slowly. Like, you know, my laptop doesn't work kind of thing. And I honestly have never seen so much adware and spyware installed in like even the startup folder on a single laptop in my entire life.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Yeah, so
in games. So, I mean, sometimes they're not trying to get into trouble, but like we mentioned Neopets. A lot of our tech kids are gamers nowadays, and sometimes there's third-party programs you can get to make games more interesting, and often those third-party programs come with surprises.
Yeah, and I don't think I know it's not, I'm not going to say all, it's definitely not all, but most kids aren't going to have the thought of like, oh, should I sandbox this? Like... Should I see what it does before I install it?
Although we know one or two kids that are probably writing their own sandbox.
Which, like, power to them. They're probably all of our problems. Like, yeah, they're like why all the other kids have spyware. Like,
exactly.
But so great, but also and I mean, in so many cases, the kids are the more technologically savvy individuals. Like, but it's still important. If they want to argue that you're a risk too, challenge your kids to VLAN, make a VLAN for everyone. I don't know, make your own subnet, child. Like, learn some networking. Like, see if you can frogger over to your parents, and if you can, you should fix that.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Kat, so much for coming on. Like, I really appreciated a lot of the points you made. I felt like you had a lot of good advice in there and just good a good view on a lot of things in security. Before we let you go, I just wanted to give you a chance to, like, if there's anything you want to share about what you're working on right now, any projects, anything from work you want to pimp out there to our audience, now's your time to shine.
Excellent. I mean, I will absolutely push if you're curious about what your remote footprint looks like. Absolutely. Like GuidePoint Security, our logo is blue. I don't know if there are links that we can add, but it's a really big blue compass.
Sure we can.
But we are happy to help with any of your remote pen testing needs if you kind of want to see what that might play out for. It is something that we're like very passionate about helping people get shored up. It is very stressful, I know, to so many IT and security professionals right now. So we are absolutely here to help you. Personally, I am just kind of, I mean, it's sort of shifted my personal projects a little bit just because we're all stuck at home now. So I don't know. I was making a little like pwn phone army, but that's like less exciting now that I can't go to other people's Wi-Fi. So there's only so many times I can, I don't know, make my own lab environment and be entertained by it. But
you need to get it back in iOS. I have an old video that I can send you. I love pwn phones, and obviously they're usually Android devices. But back in the old school Cydia days when I was still jailbreaking, there's a version of Metasploit. Took so much work to actually get work running on an iPhone, but I had an iPhone running Metasploit that pwned a Windows computer. So I love pwned
phones.
That's awesome. They're a lot of fun.
I would actually love to
talk
about
that.
But
getting it on iOS device is a pain in the butt.
Super hard. I know. That was my challenge goal, was just to be able to have this like iPhone 6 Plus or whatever, like, run the
unfortunately
county.
It was iOS 4 or 5. As you know, Apple actually is pretty good with secure boots and is not bad at keeping up, so it's gotten harder every generation. Now that we're that at iOS 13, I think chances of Metasploit is pretty low now.
Yeah,
running,
I feel like
I
don't even think iOS is like mentioned in the GMob curriculum, which like I'm pretty sure it's like, here's, you can get your like sans mobile GMob and it will only be on Android. Like, there is nothing. I don't think
there's
an
iOS links
like,
for your
chapter.
Pwn phone stuff, we'll be sure to send them to us, and we can put them in the show notes, which people can find on our blog, simplicity.org.
Yeah, absolutely. And then CTF, I don't know, I've gotten really, I like the idea of making story-driven CTF. So that's my little pet project right now.
Mark, do you hear that? You're pulling out of our story, though.
Wait, what?
Sorry, we'll talk about that offline.
We've been running
or maybe we'll talk about it now. Go ahead, Mark.
Now we've run a CTF at Black Hat and DEF CON for the last 3 years or so now.
It's
done pretty well. I think we had like 700 people last year.
That's awesome.
So it worked out. Very beginner friendly. I'd love to chat with you offline about that too.
Yeah, that'd be super fun. I think it would be really fun to have more, like, let's have more than just Alice's bank account number. Like, let's get, like, let's have some actual, like, narrative and really make it more accessible to people who are more curious about, like, I think all information is good information. I love getting more. It's why I love my job. And so I'd love to see, like, the Capture the Flag events kind of go that direction of, like, appealing to, okay, so you're doing this, but what information are you going for? Because sometimes your proof flag is just, like, not, like, it's great that you got shell, but it's not a real narrative. And so it's, I think that's a lot of, and this is like a whole other like talk, I'm sure, but you know, so frequently you get pen testers, you're like, oh, I have the OSCP, but I have no experience. And often what they're lacking is that like empathy and understanding of what like working in an enterprise environment means. And so I'm not saying that all the CTF storylines need to be an enterprise theme, but I think recognizing what sorts of sensitive information are actually like the crown jewel, so it's not just like get up, escalate, get DA, would be really fun. But yes, that's a whole other thing.
And it's an additional part of learning. Like you say, I mean, usually it's teaching new technical concepts, but as you point out, a CTF can teach you how an enterprise works, which makes you more valuable as a red teamer, because knowing that stuff could. So I think that's great. We were talking about a community, getting some community advice. Maybe you just recruited yourself to help with our CTF if you have any cycles. If we start asking you to help us out, I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, no, I love generating the narrative. And like, it's like, why would somebody put something on an FTP server versus like an NFS share? Like, why would a user do that? And so many people might not know that. Or, you know, you're in an Exchange server. What department's email might be the most interesting to like pull? So I just think that would be fascinating. So yeah,
cool,
so those
stuff.
Are my personal projects.
Awesome.
But then from a work perspective, like, we are really excited about being able to help anybody with like any remote access needs. So holler at us.
Cool. Thank you again, Kat. Thank you so much for being on. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. And thank you again, Kat, for hopping onto our show. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at XORRO underscore. Corey is at SecAdept. Both of us are at hashtag the 443 podcast. And Kat is at Kat Murdoch with the zero. That's CatMurdoch, because she's a hacker. Thanks again for listening. And you will hear from us next week.